Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Lyle.
I'm Wayne.
And Chris can't be with us this episode.
Unfortunately.
We seem to have a little guest host of the rooster that's crowing. I don't know if the microphone will pick it up.
Yeah, it's there, though.
But it's pretty constant. So if we start laughing for no reason, it's because we just heard the rooster crow again.
Can I just point out, it's not morning?
Yeah, or that this isn't like a farm.
Yeah. The inner city of Osaka, where apparently roosters run rampant.
There's no rats, just rooster epidemic.
Yeah, like I said, people aren't going to believe we're broadcasting from Osaka now. They're like, no, those guys are in, like, Central America somewhere.
Central America?
I meant the center of America, not Central America. Central Mexico.
It's like, do they have some lock-on roosters? Not really selling our
podcast. Yeah, I realized that.
So, for our second episode in the month of Hodor, we're going to change gears a bit and look at interrogation and torture.
Something rather mundane, yet perhaps just as horrific.
Or perhaps more so, because more it so. Is so mundane and so real.
I suppose when I said mundane, I didn't mean mundane as in ordinary. And perhaps mundane as in, regular or realistic.
Yeah, I think you're kind of just throwing out synonyms right now.
Yeah, I prefer to think of them as corporate buzzwords.
Yeah, one thing about doing the research for this one, you think you can be creative when you do torture and that. You're like, oh, I'd be a great master torturer. And then you realize what's already been done, and you're like, wow, I am an amateur.
Yeah, either that or you're like, somebody's already done that. Somebody's already done that, too. All right, let's see. It's almost like you have to make, like, a D100 table.
Anyway, so how we're going to organize this, we're actually going to start with interrogation. And we're going to look at some real-world interrogation techniques. Mm. And those of you who watch Law & Order, I'm a big fan. Mm. We can see where they got their techniques from. Then we'll also, because games aren't always realistic. In fact, most of them aren't. We're going to be looking at incorporating game elements, like fantasy elements and superpowers and things like that. Science fiction elements, and how that would change your interrogation. And then we're going to move on to torture. Mm.
Well, it's really just an extreme form of interrogation, or extreme interrogation technique, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose. Or then there's also torture for torture's sake. And then, of course, we'll be looking at what's actually been done. And as we alluded to before, a lot has been done. Yeah. And I want you to imagine in your mind the most horrific form of torture and see if people haven't already taught that in antiquity. And
I'm sure they have.
And then, of course, again, then we'll be looking at incorporating standard game elements and how that could change torture. And because torture is it even gray? I mean, it's just a terrible thing. And if you're primarily playing heroes, we'll also be talking about whether or not you should even have that in your game or how to include that torture in your game. All right. So we'll start off with the less horrific
interrogation.
So there's a few things out there, and some of these terms are going to be
new.
Some maybe new, but some like good cop, bad cop.
Oh, yeah.
That's certainly not new.
Or Mutt and Jeff, depending on where you're from.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Actually, I watched, I always remember this Wings episode. And they were
a lot of torture in that, huh?
I liked Wings.
I meant in the show, not it was torture watching it.
Oh, okay.
A lot of torture in that, sarcastically. Sorry, all right, go ahead.
Anyway, I like Wings, and it was... it's been so long since I watched Wings, even though I just said I liked it. But it was one of the brothers and the cab driver, who's now Monk. I forget his name. But they were using good cop, bad cop to pick up women.
Isn't it Tony Shalhoub?
Tony Shalhoub. Thank you. That is. And they were using good cop, bad cop to pick up women. So first, Tony Shalhoub had to be the bad cop. Mm. And basically, you go up and be insulting to the woman. And then the other guy swoops in as good cop. And she's like, yeah, thanks for helping me out with that creep. And then they're supposed to switch with another woman. So then the brother's like, oh, I know, I'm busy right now. And he's like, no, this is good cop, bad cop, not good cop, off-duty cop.
That's pretty funny. They actually did that in How I Met Your Mother.
Oh,
except
probably.
They called it The Pig and the Prince. It's kind of the same technique. And kind of wonder how we got onto the subject of picking up women as opposed to interrogation.
Oh, I guess seduction could be another technique. Yeah, we don't really need to have to go into too much with good cop, bad cop and what it is. Obviously, one person's the aggressor and one person is the sympathizer, the understander, the empathizer. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And is that a lot of interrogation techniques, when you look at them, is usually it's the kind of understanding and talking to the suspect as opposed to being in your face and aggressive. It's usually kind of the good cop technique works more than the bad cop if you were to separate them as two different techniques.
The carrot rather than the stick.
Yeah, the carrot tends to be more successful than the stick. A lot of times people just want to tell their side, you know, kind of justify what they did.
So you'd said before, and it was in what show was it, where the good cop wasn't playing a good cop so much as they were playing as an incompetent cop.
Oh, yeah, and Burn Notice. Ah, that's Thank you. Yeah. I guess this would be a separate technique, but they were actually, they kind of started off with good cop, bad cop to kind of set up the person that they're interrogating because as the voiceover, Michael's voiceover explains, is like when you have somebody who's trained in interrogation, and we point out like good cop, bad cop does not work with somebody with any intelligence really, because people will see through it very easily.
And I apologize to the criminal element that's listening to our podcast.
I think we lost them in gangsters. But yeah, before they even do good cop, bad cop, they kind of assess the intelligence of the person. If they figure the person's kind of somewhat intelligent, they won't use it, because if you start to use good cop, bad cop and they see through it, then they'll just kind of close up and try to turn the tables on you.
Right. I read that one of the counter techniques to good cop, bad cop is to either provoke the quote-unquote bad cop to the point where I guess the ultimate goal is to have them resort to physical violence.
Yeah.
Because at least in like the United States or other kind of, I was going to say civilized country, but that sounds really bad. You know, physical violence is usually punishable by, not punishable by law, but prohibited. So if you can provoke the bad cop to physical violence, they're have to kind of let the person go, essentially, or the interrogation would end. Or if you can, I guess, verbally harass or piss off the good cop, that often works to disrupt the technique, I guess. I brought that up because, as you said, pretty much everybody knows good cop, bad cop.
Yeah.
And although knowing it academically and experiencing it are probably two different things, I think that would be important in a game, in that, you know, in certain games, if you're dealing with like a criminal element, or if you were playing some kind of game where the people are, or the PCs are police officers or law enforcement, or, you know, dealing with people who would be familiar with good cop, bad cop, then it's probably not going to work.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. But why do we know about good cop, bad cop?
It gets used a lot.
Yeah.
I would say. Yeah,
you watch Law and Order, you watch all these crime dramas and that. You see it used a lot. Comedy, a sitcom like Wings can reference it. Everybody immediately knows what they mean, so they can do a joke on it. So good cop, off-duty cop. So everybody gets it. But in a fantasy world, they don't have this. I don't want to say only in a fantasy world, but like in whatever world that you're setting your game in, they might not have the same interrogation techniques, or they don't have like common culture like TV shows and that. And that, you know, it kind of gets into the CSI effect, is that somehow like juries and criminals are getting a lot more information on how investigations are conducted. So they're better prepared, or in the case of the jury, they expect that forensics is foolproof and will have all the answers, and they'll be presented with all the evidence on the platter. And it's the same. It's people are watch all these shows, and these shows try to be somewhat realistic. If you watch like a Law and Order, they're obviously trying to present the legal system and the law enforcement system in a somewhat realistic light. So they're actually using real techniques, and we're also going to be talking about another technique that you'll see a lot when you watch Law and Order. But if you're your bog standard D&D setting, they don't have TV.
That's a good point.
They don't have Law and Order. So how does that goblin know good cop, bad cop?
Yeah, he probably wouldn't.
Yeah, so you can then say they're not going to have the same resistance or the same insight into the technique. Whereas if you're going to set it in a modern campaign, or even if it's got some supernatural elements like werewolf, vampires.
Good werewolf, bad werewolf.
Yeah, good werewolf, bad werewolf. Well, they call it werewolf vampire. Who's the good one? I don't know. Okay, I'm just telling you. Just tell me who's sympathizing with me.
I will.
I will rip you in two. Or I will drain all your blood. Yeah. Okay, I'm seeing bad and worse cop here.
Bad and worse. Yeah.
But even in those games, I mean, you'd have to say, well, there's TV. Mm-hmm. And if there's TV, unless it'd be kind of strange for them to not have cop shows on TV because it's so popular and so prevalent in the real world.
Mm. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. That's a good point. I guess it's kind of like tech level or how fast communication can spread.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
That would dictate this.
Yeah, so you could even set it in the real world, but if you're setting it in Rome, although when we talk about some of the techniques that they use, they don't even bother with good cop, bad cop.
Yeah, it's probably not even a cop. It's just...
It's like good cop, crucifix cop.
Wouldn't it be like bad cop, crucifix cop?
Sorry, yeah.
Which one do you want? Oh, I don't know.
Hammer cop, nail cop. Sorry. All right, sorry.
Yeah. But I guess... I hadn't thought about this before, but good cop, bad cop probably gets used a lot in most games, regardless of setting, because you need two people to do it, meaning there's more of the party involved in the interrogation, as opposed to, I don't know, like a technique where it's usually just, you know, one guy. You could even have, like, good cop, bad cop, indifferent cop, if you have three people.
I'll disagree with you a little bit, because I'm not sure... I understand the numbers, I understand the math of what you're saying.
Right.
And we should point out that there's... kind of two approaches we're going to be looking at when the players are using interrogation and torture.
Right.
And when the storyteller, the game master, is using interrogation and torture.
On the PCs.
On the PCs. I think a lot of times you might have people try to do good cop, bad cop, but not necessarily. That's what I'm disagreeing with, because you might have the players then do bad cop, bad cop.
Right.
You know, or just surrounded by, you know, bad mob.
Everybody's shouting at you. Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose if you reverse it, the game master might use it as well. Mm. It's probably used a lot just because it's pretty famous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or if it is used, it would be used a lot just because of the...
It's well known.
It's well known.
Kind of like you said, if it gets used that much, something... I think something would have to be successful before it entered like mainstream media as heavily as Good Cop, Bad Cop has.
Right.
So if this thing works...
Yeah.
And it, it does, do it, you know?
Yeah, it does work with people, even if people are aware of it, but if they're not too bright, or there's other factors, like they're very tired or
scared,
then it can work because they will gravitate towards the good person. Mm. And as we said, like when you interrogate somebody, and this kind of shoots hole in Dick Cheney's theories, and what he says is that a lot of times being nice to the suspect, or more times being nice to the suspect has a lot greater reward than, you know, being aggressive and in your face. But good cop, bad cop does have the, you're in the face to maybe scare somebody who's in a new situation. Mm. Even though you watched it on TV, it doesn't mean you're going to be sufficiently prepared for it.
Yeah, like, I don't know.
And it is very dramatic, and it's easy to act, which is great in a game. I mean, a lot of times... A game will have a lot more cliches than a good story will. Like a good movie. If we were to film some of our games.
It'd be pretty boring.
Yeah. I meant
in a general sense.
In a general sense. So did I. Yeah. But you think, oh, this is a really original story that we're telling. Mm. Because, you're collaborating and it's evolving. And then if you actually were to write it out, you're like, oh, yeah, I think... people would lose interest here. Yeah,
let's spice this up a little bit with something. But
good cop, bad cop again.
I was going to say, if the players kind of on their own go, if they're in the situation, okay, this time you get to be the good cop. Yeah, if they're doing this in character, I think that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly, because it gives them like really easy roles to kind of grab onto, but that they can change their own character. So, I mean, that's what role-playing is all about. So if their character plays a certain way and you're going, no, I want you to be good cop. Mm. Yeah, and it's like, oh, okay, because that's a little bit different than the way I normally play my guys.
Right, I gotcha. You essentially get to act with your character.
Yeah.
As opposed to you, the player, acting.
Yeah.
You're playing this character who's now playing this role.
Right.
Which, as you said, may be different from the role you normally play.
And that can just encourage even more role playing. But then also drop in elements of realism is that assess the intelligence of the suspect or the interrogee. And if they seem to be pretty dim, then, good cop, bad cop will work, whether or not they are Law and Order fans or not, or whatever, like fans.
The fantasy world, the goblin. Yeah, I'm a Law and Order fan. You guys are using good cop, bad cop.
What would a Roman one be? Crucifixion and law and torture.
Law and torture, yeah, all right. But that would be a good chance for someone to use intelligence, almost that, or like an intelligence-based stat or skill as a way to resist interrogation. Because usually it would be like willpower or endurance or wisdom. But as you said, if good cop, bad cop kind of doesn't work so well against people with a certain level of intelligence, well, here's the time for, you know, the guy with high intelligence or the wizard character or whatever to say, no, I know what these guys are doing, and I'm not going to fall for it.
Or, and then just on the flip side, then the other people using intelligence to assess the guy, whether or not you're using insight or wits or whatever, but you're kind of assessing what the person is capable of, how intelligent they are, and then deciding what technique that you would then use when you walk into the interrogation room. And since you brought up the mechanics and you made little allusions to it, it's like when you look at the World of Darkness and its interrogation mechanic.
Which I really like.
Yeah, which is excellent. One thing, though, it builds from intimidation. But if we're looking at even something like good cop, bad cop is, bad cop would be intimidating, but good cop would be persuading, using persuasion or even
I suppose it's a subcategory of persuasion in World of Darkness.
Or even empathy. Subterfuge or empathy, But the World of Darkness system is flexible where you can sub out skills or and put in an alternate one. So I think the flexibility really helps there.
Right.
Because I don't think intimidation is necessarily the only path to getting the information. But then I also like that how they compare the willpowers. So if you have 5 willpower versus 3 willpower, that determines the number of successes the person needs to get.
Yeah.
But reverse. Yeah, it's like if I have 5 and you have 3, then I'll need to get 3. Whereas you'll need to get 5 to resist me.
Yeah, I like that too. It's just kind of, I don't know, it seems better than just like a single roll.
Yeah.
You know?
No, you kind of mentioned Burn Notice and didn't actually explain anything. But that actually is going to lead into another technique. And in Burn Notice, what they did is they realized that the person that they were trying to get the information from was very, very experienced and was very familiar with all the interrogation techniques and as well as all the countermeasures. So they weren't going to get what they wanted doing regular, like through regular means, and they're not evil in Burn Notice, so they weren't going to like cut off an arm. And
man, that's a bit extreme. I thought you'd at least start with like the fingers or something. You just went right to the arm. Yeah, cut off the arm.
Should be able to resist the finger, cut off her whole arm. So basically they set up like a kind of good cop, bad cop, but what they were really doing is actually doing incompetent cop. You know, it's like bad cop, incompetent cop. And this person they wanted information from was supposed to view the incompetent person as the weak link. And then that set up a common interrogation technique of deception, where they would start lying to the interrogatee. And you see, cops can do that. Cops can say they have evidence.
Yeah. When I was doing the research for this, apparently, at least in U.S. law, there's there's nothing that prevents the interrogators from providing false information to the interrogatee.
Yeah. Yeah, you see that from Columbo to Law and Order and all that, where they say, this is who we think it is.
Right.
And that's a classic one, is they say, well, we think it's this person. And that was, I think Columbo does that in almost 100% of the episodes, but they're still great.
They still work.
he knows who the real killer is, but then he'll say that another person is a suspect and he's trying to get help from the real killer. So deception is a classic one. Now, mechanically that would bring in, you know, fly rolls. And
well, I was also going to say that's probably a good chance, is that, you brought up the mechanics again. Here's another opportunity for like a face type character. Or maybe someone, I suppose you would have to have some kind of interrogation background or skills to lead the suspect to the place you wanted to go.
Right.
But using things, again, like seduction, even just like charisma or those social skills could be another opportunity to have the subject or suspect trust you.
Yeah.
If that's what you're going for. Like, you said like bluff rolls or I can't really think of anything else. You know, I should think of another way to get the rest of the party involved. I suppose it would be odd if he brought in like a third character.
Well, in that Burn Notice one, it's actually quite elaborate, but in the actual room, the interrogation room, it was just the two characters. But the other people were involved in helping to set up the deception.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that would be a good thing to do too.
I guess a lot of times you're not going to have necessarily a crowd of people.
Yeah.
I mean, interrogation is very adversarial, so you might have, if you do have a legal system, you might have a defense attorney there who's present for it, but...
I guess in a more realistic setting, there obviously has to be a legitimate, or what would seem like a legitimate reason for everybody to be in the room.
Yeah.
Whereas opposed to, like,
But if you're doing like a prisoner of war and you've just captured them, then everybody can be
there in the room.
There.
Or I was thinking like a typical fantasy campaign that there wouldn't be those laws, so everybody could just, you know, stand behind the suspect.
It could be that. And there's also the moral dilemma that maybe the behind the scenes you would play out is if the interrogation is too severe, then the paladin or the good characters would protest.
Hopefully.
Or maybe they could even act as an advocate or pretend to be an advocate. And then there you get into the deception and the good cop again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all lies. It's all lies. Another technique is the read technique.
I actually had trouble understanding this one a little bit.
I think you see this a lot in cop shows. So I spend my weekends watching Law & Order Marathon, so I've seen it used a lot. So, I mean, there's the three steps.
It seemed to me.
The three phases, I guess, is a better word.
Oh, three
because,
phases.
Because then when you get into the interrogation, there's nine steps.
Yeah, that's what I saw.
So saying three steps is confusing.
three steps, nine phases, which one is which? I was going to say, it seemed to me like the person was playing good cop. Because I think the goal of the read technique is to kind of maybe not get the suspect to trust you, but I think at least, as you said, you're kind of not being adversarial or overtly confrontational. You're just kind of trying to, I guess, build up trust.
And it's this technique, which is trademark, we should say.
Oh, yeah.
I think this is one of those, I think this technique and techniques that are similar to this is what leads people to say that the very aggressive forms of interrogation aren't as effective as these forms. Because, yeah, it is. It is essentially a how to do only good cop to get confessions. But they say it's so is this successful? I don't know. Because it's so successful that it leads to all these false confessions. So I think in Europe, they don't use it so much because and they don't use it on children or.
Is that because part of the read technique is using body language or reading body language?
I don't know if that plays a part in it, but one of the reasons is because people will confess the crimes they didn't do for whatever reason. I mean, that's hard to imagine why someone would do that, but apparently it happens.
Maybe it's
And I actually saw a video online where you're watching the cops are doing, and I believe they were doing the read technique with the suspect, and you watch it, and then the suspect breaks down and confesses to the crime, and then they find out that he actually didn't do it. And it's just amazing. But they're not in his face, they're not angry, they're just understanding the whole time. And
again, I was going to say not an expert on this at all, but could that possibly because the suspect ends up wanting to help so much that they just say that they did it just to kind of essentially like throw a bone to these cops who are, I don't know, that seems, again, not having gone through it, that seems really weird that they would confess to a crime that they didn't commit.
Maybe I don't know. I can't get into that.
Well,
I can't get into the false confession unless, I mean, there's some people that just want to be the center of the tension, but I don't think that's what.
I don't know.
I don't, maybe they have some part in what happened,
right?
But then they get them to confess to the entire crime. I'm not sure, but we're being a little bit coy here,
right? I was
actually going to explain the technique.
Oh, sorry.
But go ahead.
I was going to say just something for game masters and storytellers to think about, that if your players do end up using the read technique, maybe you should throw a false confession in there, just because if this thing works so well. And it ended up being a red herring. Anyway, sorry, I jumped the gun, so go ahead.
And the first phase is analysis, where they're just basically looking at the facts and getting a read on the person, the suspect. The second phase is an interview, and it's kind of what that sounds like. They just kind of interview the person. They do some behavioral provoking questions. And again, this is a great opportunity for role play.
Is that just kind of like a baseline of the
suspect? Kind of a baseline, yeah. And apparently the behavior provoking questions are controversial, but maybe it's because you're just saying like really inflammatory things like
your mama sucks,
stuff like that. You see that in The Mentalist, where he'll go like, oh, how long have you been gay, how long have you been in the closet, and just to provoke the guy, and so he can get a read on how they would react to certain things.
Does the interview, is that related to the crime at this point?
Like, is the interview related to the crime?
No, sorry, is the interview in phase two, is that related to the crime yet?
Oh, I think they're kind of brought in, but I don't think it's an interrogation per se, but it's just an interview getting some information.
So I think the question that I saw as part of an example was, had you been planning this for a long time, or was this just spur of the moment?
Oh, that gets into the third phase.
Ah, which, sorry.
The actual interrogation.
That's what I was trying to ask.
So that's the alternative question, which they drop in the steps. And it's, I mean, there's nine steps. There's not much value in going through all nine. Right. But basically, their demeanor throughout is understanding and caring. And when you look at the steps, is they're basically responding to what the person does.
Right.
But basically, they confront them with what the evidence is, saying that they have all this evidence, and that's the direct confrontation. But then they start to do, and this is, I guess, the big part of the Reed technique, is like they'll try to shift the blame. You know, they'll shift the blame to another person. It's not your fault that you did it.
Right.
But, you know, the victim provoked you, or somebody else provoked you, or they shifted to the circumstances. Look, you lost your job. Your wife was leaving you. Then she had an affair with your boss who fired you.
Sorry, not to interrupt, but that goes a lot into the understanding or the sympathetic role.
Yeah.
Where you're kind of like, yeah, this isn't your fault.
And that's how I see it. It's basically saying, here's like kind of, not the science, but here's a procedure to effectively be the understanding cop and get, you know, a guilty admission.
Right.
One thing that they always say is, don't let the person say, I didn't do it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or do a direct denial. Because once they start to do, I didn't do it, it kind of strengthens the victim. So, and when you read the Reed technique, and again, it was kind of like, when we talk about secrets and lies, micro expressions.
Right.
And whether or not you believe it, it's just interesting. Whether or not you really believe it, or whether or not you really believe this technique will work, it's kind of interesting. It's a nice role-playing map.
Yeah, when you said that, and I read that too, but, you know, you don't want a direct denial from the suspect, because, you know, once that I didn't do it ball kind of starts rolling, it's a lot easier to kind of not survive the technique, but it's a lot easier to keep saying it again for that instance.
So if somebody does do that, and just get into mechanics, whatever the system is, give them that bonus. Because if the person's trying to do some semblance of the Reed technique, basically trying to be the understanding cop, then if the person starts to go, no, I didn't do it, I don't know what you're talking about, then bam, they've put up the wall.
Right.
So then they should get a bonus. If you're going to do like interrogation rules, like if you're playing using GURPS and you're using the interrogation skill, then they should get a bonus.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's a good point to mention here that maybe this is kind of jumping the gun, but if you're telling a story,
yeah,
as hopefully you are in this game, you know, I get the sense that both players and GMs, if they know about this and are using the Reed technique, the suspect could immediately say, I didn't do it, you know, and kind of ignore the interaction that the interrogator is attempting.
Well, there is a step where, and of course they're saying discourage and don't let them say, I didn't do it. That doesn't mean that it breaks down and it's a deal breaker.
Oh, right, right.
I mean, that's only step three.
Six more steps.
Yeah.
What is this, like Alcoholics Anonymous?
Step four is to try to move them, move any denials to an admission of guilt. And then I think that can get quite clever. So it's like, maybe it's like a little, you're parsing their sentence or whatever, but semantics, but you're like, oh, I didn't see her that night. Oh, so when did you see her? And try to get it back on track. And again, I think it would make for an interesting game. It's basically a battle of wills, a battle of intellects.
Yeah, yeah.
Again,
battle of intellect. Yeah,
what we talked about with lying, it's social combat. And again, then you lead up to, you know, you get back to posing alternatives, and say, okay, so it didn't happen that way; it happened this way. You know, you weren't angry, or maybe you weren't planning it, but then you got angry, and then you get into what you were talking about, Wayne, the alternative question.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So did you know you were going to kill her when you went there, or did something happen?
Right.
Did it just happen? And if that's like slipped into the game or slipped into the conversation, maybe you can trip somebody up, and they're like,
yeah,
you know, because if they're lying, they're lying. And if a player does that and just like gauge the intelligence of your NPC, it doesn't matter if you know the Reed technique.
I think
would the NPC get tripped up?
I'm wondering, it's kind of interesting. Like, we're talking about an interrogation, and obviously you're interrogating this person for a reason. You want some information.
Yeah.
And sometimes, I guess, the game master or the storyteller would have set this up so that they know this character has information that the player characters want, or doesn't have information that the player characters want, because they know they picked up the wrong person. But I guess sometimes, like, it could happen on the fly, where you capture a prisoner, or you just have this opportunity to, you know, interrogate someone.
Yeah.
And maybe the GM or the player kind of hasn't decided whether the person knows this information and is, you know, kind of not scrambling, but I guess essentially scrambling to figure out what this person knows. And I guess that could be a problem if the players or the GM like sort of use something of this Reed technique with the alternate questions, and the person could potentially give not the wrong answer, but, you know, they could almost kind of lose, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know. I am not sure if the read technique's applicable in a situation where you're just getting information.
Well, I was just
because
thinking...
Because you're trying to work towards getting an admission of guilt.
Right.
Is that's the goal in this particular technique. I mean, you can. I'm sure you can adapt it, but...
Well, what I was imagining is, like, the players are interrogating someone...
Right.
...that the GM hasn't really planned for, and they ask an alternate question, and the GM, like, example, like, you know, you didn't go there planning to kill her, but did you go... Did you just happen?
Yeah. Right.
If the GM, and if the person is innocent, yeah. And the GM says, oh, I didn't plan to kill her right away, and then the players go, aha, so it just happened in the moment, and they kind of latch on to that admission of guilt,
right?
Essentially, and the GM goes, ah, crap, you know, this guy didn't do it, I just kind of got tripped up a little bit.
Oh, I see what you're saying,
and
yeah.
Now the players aren't going to let this go.
I guess it depends on, I mean, there's a lot of times when you're game mastering, and it's like, is this going to derail my story, or is this going to add to my story?
That's a fair thing. And then
you could make the guy go, I didn't do it. I didn't do it. Like, look, you tripped me up.
Yeah, that's
and
a good
goes,
point.
I'm not a smart guy. Like, I'll watch in True Blood,
with Jason
interrogating
Stackhouse,
Jason,
yeah.
And it's like, they say something, and he goes, you know, I'm not smart enough for that.
Yeah, that was
after
pretty funny.
After the pause to try to figure out what they just said.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty funny. Then he's like, yeah, you know he's not. All right.
And the guy's like, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Or you just make that, maybe it'd be anticlimactic if you kind of like mid-adventure say, okay, I've now changed it. That guy is the suspect. That guy did do it. But then you got to deal with, and he's in their custody already. Adventure over.
Yeah, I'm not, I kind of see there's a little bit of cheating.
Yeah, okay.
Because if you got the whoever you decided is the killer, and I know you want to adapt the story and you make it a sandbox as you want, but if you change who the killer is, I find that cheating.
Okay,
I wouldn't just like, oh well, they did a good job and tripping it, but yeah, they did a good. But that's the danger of this technique is you get false confessions. So if you guys knew about this technique to begin with, then you know that there is that danger, and here it is. Now you guys you're going up a blind alley.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And you might be, you know, you always bring this up about consequences. Mm.
That would be a good thing for a story. It's like, okay, now
it's a serial killer, let's say, and it's like the murders are still going on. And sometimes you find that. Some great episodes of, you know, Law and Order is where they end up like chasing the wrong person.
Right. I was going to say, here's another chance for like someone maybe with training in psychology or some kind of academic knowledge to then, after the fact, kind of like look at the evidence or watch like a tape or be watching this interrogation and to like make a couple roles, bring their skills into play and, you know, have that player realize, no, he's lying or not lying, or he did get tripped up and that's a false admission.
Yeah.
And now we're on the wrong track.
So. Yeah, that's good. It's good. Or,
or even just intelligence.
Like you're saying, it's like, oh, he has an eager to please personality, issues with his mother, father. Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah, I like it when they bring in the psychiatrist.
Yeah, and, I was kind of thinking that,
And they get a read on the person. Another technique is pride and ego down. And I would see that very good for a spur of the moment when you're grabbing like that guy after a battle, that person after the battle. You failed, you know. You're a loser. You got abandoned.
Yeah, isn't this used by the army a lot?
Yeah.
Or at least that's where I saw it from.
Yeah.
Yeah, you kind of... I could see how that would... That's almost a little bit like bad cop. If the read technique is kind of like good cop, then that pride and ego down is a little bit... It's not confrontational, but it's a little bit of the bad cop, because in that one, you're essentially belittling the person.
Yeah,
and
kind it's of, like a psychological bad cop. Yeah.
Yeah, you're kind of saying, oh, no, you couldn't have done this, you know? You're not skilled enough, you're not talented enough, you're not capable enough to do this. And hopefully, you know, eventually the person will say, ah, well, screw you, yes I am, and here's how I did it.
Yeah, basically they attack the person's sense of
self-worth.
Their intelligence, their leadership ability, things like that. I guess the caution they say is, if it doesn't work, it's difficult to switch to another technique. But that can... Of the actual straight up interrogation techniques, and we're going to be moving on to the more euphemistically described interrogation techniques and then on to torture. But of all of these ones, I think this one can get the most touchy at the gaming table.
I can see that, yeah.
Where, and I remember I did this training back when I was in university. I worked with the handicapped and...
Kind of like gaming with us, huh?
I did not say that. But you do this thing called nonviolent crisis intervention. Mm-hmm. And basically, it's like how to defuse a situation or how to non-violently restrain somebody. And one of the things, one of the exercises they had to do is you get, you know, so that you remain calm in the situation is somebody kind of provokes you. And it's
almost
just like
a roast.
Well, it's not like,
not that insulting. You know, yeah. Like anyway, sorry, go ahead. No, but I said that because I imagined the person sitting in a chair.
Yeah.
You know, while all these other people around them kind of like belittling them?
No, I was face-to-face standing. Oh. They were trying to, because a lot of times it would be a one-on-one situation.
Oh, I meant like all the other people are kind of insulting you.
No, no. So like one person would insult you. You would kind of, you would be standing there and I'd go, you're ugly, you know. And and although, you know, it's an exercise, it's still, you're like, I'm ugly. Well, how about you, dude?
Yeah, I can see that. Me? Yeah. F me? F you? Yeah. You know? He's like, no. It's Bobby's turn to be the insulter.
Yeah,
just wait until it's my turn on you. Like Savage Worlds has taunt. I was trying to think of other things
a lot of systems would have taunt. Now, we've touched on it. We mentioned about fantasy, supervillains. Mm. But let's get into that a little bit more. So we're talking about interrogation. Mm. But if you're playing in a fantastic world, a world or a supernatural world, you got all these supernatural powers. Mm. And how does that play into interrogation?
You threaten them with a fireball.
Okay. Yeah. That's a very bad cop. Fire me cop. Yeah, good cop. Fireball cop.
Yeah. Fire. No, it's what's the word? Like greater healing cop and fireball cop.
Yeah.
But I think it is worth, granted, those were kind of like, I guess more like torture methods, but.
Yeah. I mean, we are like, going to.
Yeah.
But we are going to do this again when we do the torture.
Right. So I was trying
but
to think more like.
Let's just focus on like the interrogation.
Right.
So if you look at a game like Vampire, you've got Majesty, yeah. Dominate. It can almost make the game too easy.
I think you're right. It almost would make interrogations too easy, at least if the interrogators have these powers, whatever they are, and the suspect doesn't, then it becomes pretty easy, unless there's some way that the suspect can enhance their own abilities.
Yeah, if they don't have the defenses to fight it off, then yeah, it could just be a case of, tell me.
Yes,
yeah.
I did.
And it, when you're looking at from in the direction of game master to player, that can be very unrewarding for the players because the players feel like they've lost control. They haven't been tricked. They've lost maybe one die roll.
Right.
And now they're kind of, okay, now I got to tell you.
Right. Like they didn't get cheated because everything that happened hopefully was within the rules of the game. But yeah, they would probably feel cheated because like, well, what could I have done? Like look at all the dice you're going to roll.
Yeah.
Or look at all the dice you did roll, and this is all I get. This is this one die roll because I don't have any of those powers.
Yeah.
I'm thinking a lot about like a vampire versus like a mortal.
Yeah.
Which would probably be like no conflict. Do you even have to roll? No, not really. All right. I think that's something Game Master would have to be aware of and plan for. But apart from that, I don't really know what else you could do in that kind of situation. It's just going to be like, it's almost inevitable that's going to happen.
You can use like some of the downfalls or the disadvantages of like, for example, like the Wreath technique.
Mm.
It's like if you use Majesty and the person wants to please you, they want to please you so much that they're going to tell you
nothing
anything.
Right.
But they're telling you these things because they want to please you.
Mm.
And it's just like the problem with torture, and what did Mark Twain say? Is confess what, truth or lies?
Hmm.
And basically, you know, I mean, if you're gonna beat somebody, they're gonna tell you whatever
to make the beating stop. Yeah,
to make the beating stop. And look at it from this perspective: is they really want to please you?
Hmm.
You know, you've turned on this supernatural majesty or this supernatural presence. Hmm. If you want to use the old school vampire lingo. To give you that information, or even like pride, ego down, is you break the person down so that they want to prove their worth. They might just tell you stuff that sounds good to show you, no, I know what the plan is. Mm. They don't really know the plan. They never knew the plan.
Right.
All that stuff you were saying actually was right. They are worthless. They're not in the loop.
I was going to say, even with like mind reading or mind control, the opposite, but it's almost like, yeah, did you do this? And you're going to immediately know if the person's telling the truth. And why would you use other interrogation techniques then? Because if you've used like a mind reading power to get the truth from this person, then unless you're in a setting where...
Oh, I'm not talking about mind reading. I was talking about...
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
I was just saying like, unless you're in a setting where like everybody kind of has this power or what the interrogator says will be taken as truth, then there's no reason for other interrogation techniques because you've already gotten the answer. I could see it kind of being interesting in kind of like a situation where nobody else knows that you have this power. Hmm. And so now you've gotten the truth, but now you actually have to use more mundane methods to get them to admit it so that everybody else can hear what they said.
Oh, it's like Columbo. He knows who the killer is, and it's not so much a whodunit, but is how is he going to prove it.
Right. That's one way it could be used, or one way you could kind of get around it, but it doesn't really solve the
If you're looking at ones that aren't as foolproof as reading the mind, like something like Majesty, where it's more of a super charisma, then you could actually become over-reliant on it in that when they are trying to please you, is you don't see through that. You know, you're kind of deceiving yourself. You're not saying, oh, he could be telling me things I want to know and just making some stuff up.
Yeah.
So their actually ability to see through these lies is reduced.
You automatically assume everybody's telling you the truth.
Right.
Because I'm using this power, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you can have somebody fail. Or the person could fail in using their power on the person. You don't let on. You act like they've succeeded. And you just tell them something.
Kind of brings up like a sidebar.
Because then, you know, that makes them, sorry, before the sidebar.
Right, right.
You can finish the point. Yeah. Is that would make the person wary when the person tells them information. I've used my power, but did I really succeed? Because, I mean, obviously when you get into, you succeed in using your power.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like Secrets and Lies. It's like, he's lying. He's telling the truth.
Yeah.
Well, how about a little more?
Yeah.
And just like in Secrets and Lies, personally, I think that brings up a good time to use hidden roles when you're using these interrogation techniques.
Oh, definitely.
Because
that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Yeah. Personally, I think the drama of the game sometimes can be taken away when everybody sees what both sides rolled.
Right.
Because sometimes it can be hard enough to role play a character. But when you fail and you as the player know you failed, it can be really hard to pretend that the character doesn't know that they failed. And that Majesty example made me think of it.
Yeah, I'll try again.
Yeah, exactly. I'll try again. It's like, no, you won't because you don't know that you failed. Or if the game master feeds you false information, later on you're like, the game master might think, well, why are you not acting on this information? Or that's what he said. He's like, oh, I didn't believe that. Why not? You failed the role, right? Yeah. You think that's what's happening.
Yeah.
So I think that's just another good opportunity to bring up hidden roles and that you can say, no. Oh, he says this, and then the players, all they have to look at is their own dice, and like, did I succeed? I don't know. So,
you had a sidebar?
That was it.
Oh, that's your sidebar.
Yeah,
I have another sidebar.
Okay. What's this, the side sidebar?
The side sidebar. It might be a sidebar on your sidebar. But I think you were talking about it with deception, and you were a little bit surprised that police could use deception. Because there are like certain, or even like when you're trying to provoke the bad cop and good cop, bad cop, which really would only work in a society with laws that protect the suspect.
Right.
Because provoking a bad cop in a society don't care. In ancient Rome, if you provoke bad cop,
you just made your torture that much faster.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa, aren't you going to interrogate me? No, that insult, that really did it.
Yeah,
I think protected by laws is a better, that's what I was trying to say when I said civilized.
Right.
And being protected by laws is, I think, a better way of saying it.
So if you have a society that provides certain rights to the accused, or even like certain rights or protections for a prisoner of war or along those lines, then that can kind of offer some interesting parameters or limits to the players. And if you were going to do like a very open society, like let's say vampires are out in the open, like True Blood, and they're using I think they call it glamour.
Yeah, they call it glamour. It's pretty much dominate. I would call it dominate.
Oh, is it more like dominate?
Because they can pretty much mind control people.
And they can make them forget stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's kind of like, it's kind of like a mix of Requiem's Majesty in that it does act as super charisma, but it's more like dominate in that you can pretty much definitively tell these people what to do.
Yeah, so stuff's out in the open, and they know that, then that's codified in the laws. So if you're like this vampire police officer and you're doing these things, I mean, it doesn't matter what you know now, because it can all get thrown out of court.
Yeah.
Or you would still have to release the person. You can just apply that. I mean, all societies have, I'll say all civilized societies have some form of law. And playing with that can make a really interesting game. I mean, if you're talking about interrogation and it's just pull a guy off to the side and just, take
the crap out of him.
Yeah, and just like beat him with the flat of the sword until he says something. I mean,
other than stop, no, don't.
Yeah, no, don't. I did not. I mean, you can say, no, you can't do that to the guy. It doesn't matter that he's a goblin. You know, there's certain laws. I mean, if you do that to him, he's going to do that to us. Mm. And putting those restraints on the players, I think, can make a more compelling game and could actually encourage role playing more.
Isn't that kind of the point of 24? I'm saying, like, that's why the I would argue that's why the interrogation and the torture is kind of meaningful, because there are these laws that prevent that sort of thing or limit what these people can do.
So they have to justify
it. Right, exactly. You kind of have the, well, like you said, they got to justify it, or they have to decide how far they go because they know where the line is. So I suppose that's kind of like the opposite. Like, if the person doesn't know that there are, or that there are, that there is a line they can't cross, it's kind of the same thing. It's not meaningful.
Right.
Because, oh, I didn't know. Whereas, like, if there aren't any laws, there's no lines you can cross.
Right.
So, again, so I would argue it's only meaningful when there's a very clear line that people should or should not cross, and then the players or whoever doing the interrogation has to decide, do I cross that line?
Well, speaking of lines, we're going to get into enhanced interrogation techniques, which is just a euphemism for
torture.
Mini torture, either torture or just torture. Or just
so I'm
going to
take this very small hammer and start on your toes. Mini torture.
And these are, the big buzzword is waterboarding, where I think you wrap a towel around a person's face and then pour water over it.
Yeah.
And it simulates drowning.
Yeah, I think just kind of lay it over their face, yeah.
Yeah, I think they've got to be lying down or something.
Yeah.
And then there's hypothermia, stress positions, and people who've seen those pictures that came out of Iraq, it's where, like, person standing up with perhaps, like, their wrists are handcuffed to their ankles, slapping, abdomen strikes.
Basically all the things that happened to me when I pledged a fraternity.
Yeah, yelling, or 20-hour interrogations, and then fear, controlled fear, like
sleep
muzzled dogs, and sleep deprivation.
What was the muzzled dogs?
It's controlled fear. The army uses it, apparently, the American army.
Basically what, they put you in an area full of muzzled dogs?
Probably they have like a muzzled dog, and let's say have the dog like lunge at you.
It's kind of hard to say whether that's scary or not sitting here. Well, the dog's not here, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, sleep deprivation, I mean, you get tired, but then, sitting here and not in a cell, you're like wondering why, again, it gets into why would you ever admit something that you didn't do? Now, I guess you might tell some information just to get them to stop, but if you didn't do something, you wouldn't admit to it.
Right.
I would think. But then sleep deprivation does, like, I just want to sleep. It doesn't matter. I'll tell you tell you anything.
That's kind of a gray area. Well, obviously, it's supposed to be a gray area, though.
But you know something, like we talk about this, and I think people would just blow by these, because they won't even bother. I think the danger is players just launch right into torture. Or
I've kind of found that to be true.
Yeah, they'll just go, oh, ask a few questions, oh, you're not giving me the answer, bam, let's start beating on them.
Cut off a finger.
Right. So, I mean, this is out there, so if you have a somewhat realistic game, or if you have a game with parameters, which you should, then these are the ones that are on the edge.
Right.
Or some would argue they're over the edge.
You know what? The sleep deprivation thing.
Yeah.
Perhaps the reason why players jump right to what would be considered torture is because some of these techniques take time. Mm. Like sleep deprivation, no pun intended, not going to happen overnight, right?
I think that was totally intended.
No, it was. waterboarding, or these things either take time to execute or take time to set up.
But also, they just don't really sound like... Honestly, like, people describe waterboarding, and I think one of the reasons, the people that have actually been waterboarded are strongly against waterboarding.
Right.
I think it was Jesse the Body Ventura, I think he was like a Navy SEAL.
I don't know.
And he said one of the things they did in Vietnam, or when era is when he served in the military, and he said one of the things that they did is they would get waterboarded so they knew what it felt like. Mm. And it's to build up their resistance and their countermeasures. And he's very much strongly opposed to the United States using waterboarding because he knows what it feels like. Mm. And for us, it's like, okay, somebody puts a towel over my head and pours water on it. It's like, it may seem like I'm drowning, but I know I'm not going to drown.
Right.
And it has no long-term effects. It's not like my stats on my character sheet are going to go down. Or in the real world, it's not like somebody's cutting off my arm. Mm. So maybe that's another reason why people maybe gloss over it, or they don't know how to role play it working.
Like, we talked about acting.
Acting.
That could be a good, a good time to kind of, you don't want your characters to be caricatures, but you do kind of have to act over the top sometimes. So, I could see if you're gonna use good cop, bad cop on the PCs, make the bad cop a bad cop, right? So that way the good cop just seems that much gooder. And yes, I teach English as a profession. So, you know, but I could see sort of, I don't know, trying to heighten that so that players really caught on to what was happening. Well, maybe not caught on if you're trying to deceive them, but...
What if you yelled at a guy? Mm. Yelled across the table. That'd be pretty startling.
Yeah, it would.
That would put somebody off.
It's almost kind of like building up mood.
Yeah.
In like a horror game or, yeah, kind of like yelling. Yeah, I could see if you're... Yeah, or doing something else to startle the players. Probably only work like a couple times.
But, you know, I mean, you could just do it as a mechanic. Sleep deprivation. Mm. Yeah, it takes a long time, but the person, the more sleep they lose, the lower their resistance is.
That's how World of Darkness handles it.
Yeah. Well, I think any system that would just basically gives minuses or pluses, whatever, depending on what it is.
Or you could go completely method. Okay, you know what? None of you players can sleep for the next 3 days. Then we're going to play a session.
Do an all-night session and then introduce?
You'd have to time it well so that... You
know. I played an all-night... The very first time we played Vampire, it was all night.
Oh.
And it got to the point where the detective knocked on the door and the guy answered and said, I hear there's a dead body in here. And he goes, yes. And the detective like walked in. And then the guy's like, why did I just tell him that? There's a dead body in my apartment. I heard there's a dead body. And I was like, but you're very tired. And yeah. I was like, wow.
Or if you just aren't thinking, in my case. Was that you on the news? Yeah, it was. Why did I just say that? I don't know. Why did you just say that?
You were well rested.
Yeah, I know,
happened.
I know.
So now we're going to move on to torture. So we've just gone through the gray area.
Into the black.
So remember when we said at the beginning of the episode, remember the worst kind of torture you can imagine. And let's see if history has taught that.
So I think it has.
I'm just going to list some common torture techniques that have been used. Some of these were just torture for torture's sake. And in interrogation, of course, you want some information. Mm. Even in enhanced interrogation techniques, and people call it torture, they want information.
Right.
So some of the stuff we're going to talk about now, they don't care.
They don't care what
they
you
might,
say.
They might care or they might not. Mm. It's kind of the like that scene in Reservoir Dogs where the guy's like, I don't know anything. And he goes, I don't care. It's like, oh, this is not going to be a good time. the breaking wheel. You tie somebody up on the spokes, and then you basically take a cudgel or
blunt instrument
or a club and just basically beat on their legs, break them.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Boiling to death. You have an extra spin, not you. You found it.
Now, I personally like to use something called the brazen bull.
What's the brazen bull?
Well, it's quite involved. I forget who invented it. I think it was used in ancient Greece, and basically it was a giant hollow brass bull that had a door, and you could obviously put people in it, and then you built a fire underneath this bull, and you essentially roasted the person alive because the metal would become so hot that, you know, they kind of just burned.
Hmm.
So, yeah, similar to boiling to death.
Well, there's flaying. Fans of Song of Ice and Fire, the Boltons who like to flay people.
And wear their skin, yeah.
Yep. There's a slow slicing.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up when we think of flaying, yeah.
Yeah, Death of a Thousand Cuts, the Chinese one. It's slow, little cuts or removing body parts piece by piece.
Really, really slowly, yeah.
Yeah, which I guess was different from maybe dismemberment, which is more just removing whole chunks quite quickly. Crucifixion. Impalement, just burning at the stake. Crushing, and there's a very cool, where you put like weights to crush them. And during the Salem witch trials, there was a guy, probably should get a shout out, called Giles Corey, whose last words were, more weight. Because he wouldn't enter a plea.
Huh.
He wouldn't say he was guilty. So they've been trying to get him to confess, and his last words were, more weight.
So in other words, he was trying to be a badass.
I think he was a badass. You know, I think if you're being tortured, there's a lesson there. If you're being tortured, you know you're going to die, so you might as well just, like, come up with some really, really good last words because you got, like, witnesses.
More cuts.
More cuts, yeah. I wish I had more fingers for you to cut off.
Oh.
Yeah, I wish I had 11 fingers. Stoning. And this one, the woodcut on this one actually made me gag a bit. It's called sawing. And they basically hang somebody upside down and then saw them in half, starting from...
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, basically... Split them into two halves. Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty rough.
And this one just defies...
Logic?
No, it doesn't defy logic. It's
decency?
Just, Yeah, you. It does defy human decency. And when you have something like sawing, which is gross, it's so elaborate and it's evil.
Hey, well, when you torture people for a living, you gotta find ways to keep yourself interested.
Like it's called scaphism, and that's Greek for hollowed or scooped out. And basically, they take a person and they put them in either two hollowed out trunks face to face, or they put them in two boats face to face. So basically, they're kind of in like a little shell, and only their head and limbs are showing. And they feed them milk and honey until they get diarrhea, and basically that little shell fills up with their feces. And then they smear honey on their limbs, and maybe their face as well. And basically the feces and the honey attracts insects, and they might put them in like in a stagnant pond or something. Yeah, then the insects go to town on you. And one guy took like 17 days to die. Now this is an ancient thing, and as you said before, like the Greeks and Romans, they would allow torture for slaves. Mm. And in fact, they would only accept the slave's testimony if they had been tortured, because they would consider it unreliable if they hadn't. Which, of course, flies in the face of what like people like Napoleon Bonaparte or Mark Twain thought when they thought, or Nice Guy Eddie from Reservoir Dogs, is like, if you torture somebody, they're just going to tell you whatever you want to know. Mm. It doesn't matter if it's the actual truth. Yeah, Nice Guy Eddie, it doesn't necessarily make it fucking so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's kind of, I don't know, something to think about if you're doing... I mean, pretty much, well, if you're not doing a modern game where torture's pretty much frowned upon.
Yeah.
If you are doing, like, a game in a different era, that would be something, or a different setting, that would be something to think about.
Yeah.
Like, how is torture viewed? And, yeah, like you said, you Greeks know, and Romans, like, if you're a slave, you're unreliable. You're going to be tortured to get a confession if you saw something.
Yeah, you know, I also read, you know how Braveheart, when he gets disemboweled? I suppose drawn. Drawn and quartered.
Yeah.
And then he yells freedom. You know what Braveheart did to the treasurer of England? They flayed him into thongs. You know, I noticed that didn't make the movie. Like
thongs that they wore in the sandals or other parts?
I wasn't seeing it as like underwear or like a bathing suit. I was seeing it as like strips.
That's nice fashionable.
Yeah. Are you wearing the treasurer?
Yeah.
What do you think? Kind of lose a little bit of sympathy for him. Mm. Him being drawn and quartered. When he captured a guy, he just flayed him.
Well, the movie was about him, so they had to make him look good.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, I guess him flaying someone, you know, looking like Hannibal Lecter in the middle of the movie is not going to help that.
They didn't say they ate him. Although I wonder what they do with the people after they boil them alive.
Yeah, yeah.
Who wants soup?
Imagine that scene. Should we eat him now, Braveheart? He's like, oh, please.
We're civilized.
Yeah.
Just turn his skin into underwear.
Now, where's my skin face mask? Put the lotion on there.
I was thinking of that too.
Yeah, I guess he's more like Buffalo Bill.
Mm. I think that maybe that's a good, like we said in the beginning.
So, yeah, I mean.
I was going to say, I think tone has a lot to do here in terms of like you said, torture pretty much obviously in like, we've crossed the line.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, I think something that gets kind of glossed over is, okay, yeah, there's obviously a mechanical benefit. Well, benefit's kind of a strong word. There's obviously a mechanical result to using torture.
I know benefit's probably right.
Right, benefit. Yeah. But if you resort to torture, that, I would argue that does something to you. And like you said, I always like to bring up consequences.
Yeah.
So I would say if the player characters are using torture, something's gotta happen to them. And I don't mean, you know, the family of the person you tortured comes back for revenge.
Right.
I'm thinking, again, I kind of always go back to the World of Darkness morality system just because I think it's a good system.
Right.
In that, okay, you look at down that morality system and there's kind of like levels. You know, like, I think like morality 8 means you gotta make a roll whenever you accidentally cause harm to someone.
Yeah, it's more human than human.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. 7 would be standard.
Right, so I don't think an ordinary person would have the stomach to torture someone. Or if they witnessed that, or if they were, you know, complicit in that, then something's gotta happen to the character who did that. Probably they become a lot harder, you know, or a lot more inured. And they kind of, again, to use the World of Darkness thing, they would slip down that morality scale. And I think that's something that needs to happen if the players do resort to torture.
I agree with you. And I think people, when they get into the game, they don't realize that even punching a helpless person would make the average person in the real world recoil. Mm. Because there's a certain level of sadism involved in doing that. Whether or not you're like the Jack Bauer in 24. And as you said, yeah, and when you watch 24, it kind of plays... Jack Bauer is no longer a normal person.
Right.
And there's kind of like an acceptance. And
isn't that kind of like a... Not a usual trope, but I'm even thinking of like Indiana Jones and...
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, I was thinking Raiders of the Lost Ark. But like even in that one, you have a guy who specializes in this thing.
Yeah.
Or in torture and enhanced interrogation techniques.
Yeah.
Where it's almost kind of like usually even the big bad guy is kind of a little nervous around this guy.
Right. Yeah.
Because it's like, whoa, you know, I'm a Nazi. You know, I'll shoot people in the face. I'll do all this stuff. But not even I will do the stuff that this guy is going to do. The stuff he does or the stuff they do. No, that's just wrong. So I think it's kind of like, yeah, when you have that situation where even like... The enemy or the antagonists are like, you know, those lines even we won't cross.
Right.
So it just kind of reinforces even more the fact that, yeah, if your players do this,
yeah,
there's got to be some kind of consequence or something has to happen to the characters.
And even as something as in a game setting that seems benign as like just punching them. Mm. But I'm going to flip it now.
Right.
Because, yeah, I think I will say that is like a caution is players and maybe the game master generally plays like the evil people.
Right.
Is they don't realize just how easy it is to cross the line. Mm. You know, like I think in medieval England, the punishment for treason is to be hanged, drawn, and quartered in public. And if you're for a man, and if you're a woman, you'd be burned at the stake. Mm. What they would consider moral and immoral is different. And that's fine if you want to say in your fantasy world, you know, or in your science fiction setting or whatever, the concept of morality is a little bit different.
Mm.
It's shifted. Then everything's got to be shifted.
Right.
It can't be equal rights and all these races walking around hand in hand and it's the Rainbow Coalition for everything else. Mm. And then once it gets to the torture, people don't bat an eye, just, you know, beating this goblin to death.
Yeah. That was a good point. Yeah.
Yeah, it's whatever the morality system as far as torture goes, whatever the thoughts on torture goes, it will kind of carry over into our society. Mm. The reason why we'd be so squeamish about beating somebody tied to a chair is we have a lot of rights.
Mm.
And we've kind of, you know, society's more wussified or whatever, more legal.
Wussified, I like that.
And for the better. We've evolved to that.
No, I think that's a good point. The other one I was going to say is what you made me think of. If you're playing in like a historical game where... If the setting of your game says, yeah, slave, you know, the testimony of slaves is only reliable under torture, then kind of not the flip of that, but that shouldn't cause anything to happen to the players because that's just what society is. And even if they disagree with it, the characters in that game know that this is what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying that they then have a right to torture everybody they see, but if that's what happens, then that's what happens,
yeah.
You know, and that shouldn't really be, well, I'm not going to say it shouldn't be a problem,
right.
But it would be a much smaller deal. And yeah, I disagree with what he said, what happened, but that guy's a slave.
Right.
And that's just what happens.
Yeah, we can't actually abuse this or take this or be completely indifferent
we can do
to 90% of the population because 90% of the population will have a revolt.
Right. We can do it in principle, not in practice.
Right. So I think then... Just to use the slave example, and that doesn't mean then let's use some flaying and slow slicing.
Mm.
And I would say, oh, okay, you're still flaying and slow slicing a person.
Right. Oh, yeah. So,
I mean, torture can be pretty, I'll say benign or less severe. There's a certain severity scale. Oh. So if the players like, you know, start raping the slave to make them speak or rape the family to make the one person speak, then you're like, well, I think we've just crossed a huge line. That's ancient Rome.
In several fields.
I don't care if it's ancient Rome.
I haven't even really talked about psychological torture.
Oh, we mentioned a little bit of, with fear.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like the muzzled dog, just as far, like in the real world. But yeah, and you know, I just want to, so we don't really talk too much about what real torture is, but we could talk about what you can do in the game. So if you have, for example, shapeshifters or people that can change the shape of other people,
right,
using like a polymorph spell or vicissitude, the smissies,
right,
in Vampire the Masquerade.
There's a creative use, very creative use of the polymorph spell, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, who would want to live their life as a frog? If you just use this straight up, it's like, okay, you're a frog for a day and then bring them back and it's like, you want to talk? No! Frog again. You could, or the smissies, they would, one of the ways they kept their ghouls in line is the threat of they would cause deformities or a lot of pain just by like playing with your body and changing the shape.
Changing into something, yeah.
Yeah. They're going to make your bones punch through your skin and then you're living in constant pain.
That's pretty good.
If you take a vain person and make them ugly.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, you could do that in a very mundane way of like cutting off their nose. But one thing about the kind of supernatural approach is you can undo it easily without effect. And ashamed to say it, there was a moment in one of our games where we had a wounded goblin.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we used the promise of magical healing to try to elicit.
Stick, yeah.
Yeah, as a carrot. But when you think about it wasn't really a carrot. It was an orange stick.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Because he was wounded. We were denying medical treatment, which we would not be able to do in this world.
Yeah.
Yeah, this world being the real world.
That's a good point.
So what we had crossed the line where we're looking at someone who speaks, someone who thinks, or something that speaks, that thinks, it's sentient. You know, we can converse with it. And we're watching it writhe in pain, and we're saying we're denying it treatment. And it was, what did it do? Did it rape our families? No. It just attacked the town. That happens in war.
Oh, I forget what book I saw it in, but you brought up the fact that, yeah, it can speak, we can converse with it. And I think something that can affect the mechanics of it is, do you speak the same language as the subject? And if you don't, can you really interrogate that subject? No, probably not. So I could see that being used in like a fantasy or a science fiction game because even in a game set in the real world, I mean, there's so many languages. Whereas, you know, if you don't speak the same language as your subject, you can't really interrogate them. Or if you only speak kind of a broken language, well, then you're only going to get so much out of them. Or there's only so much you can do to converse with this person, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I was actually, when you were talking about that, I was thinking about a way to use a lack of communication as a form of psychological torture. Because if you can somehow, like, magically cast a spell on someone and whatever they say is gibberish.
Mm.
So now no one can understand what they say. Or whatever they write, no one can read it. It's illegible. It's no language. Or if you look at a lot of times a science fiction setting might have like a universal communicator.
Right.
And you deny them access to that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, it's an isolation that even if they manage to escape, then they're still isolated from the world. No one can understand them.
Or even just like you let them out. You know, that's the torture. I mean, you wouldn't really let a suspect go.
Mm.
But I'm thinking, yeah, you do this so that they can't speak or write or they can't really understand anything. And just, yeah, okay, you're free to go now.
Yeah.
So long as they watch you. Mm. Hey, I could see that being used in, I wanted to bring up Eclipse Phase, because they have psychosurgery. Because basically, if you can digitize the consciousness of the mind and sort of put it into a computer, then, yeah, there's all kinds of things you can edit, change their thought process, their behavior, kind of who they are.
Yeah.
And that could be a really effective form of interrogation and torture, especially if you kind of upload this consciousness. Now you can pretty much do whatever you want to it. I mean, it still has pain receptors, and you don't even have to worry about them dying from lack of blood or, you know, cessation of other bodily functions because they don't have a body anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's where a lot of times the experts come in, is that it's not so much that they know all these cool techniques that cause pain. A lot of people can figure out how to cause pain, but they're able to cause pain without the person dying.
Right. Or without it being noticed.
Yeah, sometimes.
To other people.
Yeah, sometimes you have to factor that in.
Another good use for the anatomy or medical skill, like we had said before.
I think a lot of times, though, we should address this, is a lot of times that players resort to, good players, that resort to torture, it's because that they're not getting a quick result.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the game master, the storyteller, has to be careful that the NPCs don't all have iron will. I mean, if you're just taking a random foot soldier and you're interrogating them, they're not special forces. You know, they didn't, you know, not some special forces goblin that will, you know, that will not give you any information, no matter what you do, if just by questioning them or offering them bribes or anything soft. I mean, you're kind of forcing the players to go to that torture.
Yeah, you are.
That torture route. So when we talk about consequences, you have to be careful because a couple things is, did you actually cause this? If everybody they capture is somehow an expert at interrogation countermeasures, has an iron will, and just won't give it up.
Right.
Right. When a lot of times you capture somebody, they're just going to want, they want to be let go, or they want somewhat preferential treatment. So they're willing to gab away.
Right.
Why does this person have this undying loyalty to this warlord?
Especially if they're a mook.
Yeah. If they're like some henchman that, you know, gets randomly killed.
I was going to say the classic joke that we talked about before is how the villain offs henchmen left, right, and center.
Right.
Well, it's like he just got captured by the heroes. Hey, anything's better than the treatment I was getting before. Yeah, what do you want to know? I'll tell you. Hey,
yeah.
You actually, hey, all my limbs are still intact. No bones broken.
And they
fed me.
Yeah. And allow that to work. Mm. I mean, but if you're going to create these fearless fanatics, then you've created a situation and you've boxed your characters in, and that might be fine if that's the story you want to tell. But then if they go that route and you didn't want them to go the route, you didn't want to explore all these gray areas, or you didn't want to, you know, like have anti-paladins instead of paladins, well, you only have yourself to blame. And then I would say maybe you need to roll back the consequences a little bit.
Yeah.
And it also makes it really, I think it would make a more interesting game if sometimes they get somebody and they're willing to talk. Mm. Sometimes they get somebody and then, you know, maybe they're higher up or they're specially trained and they're not willing to talk. So they can see how the different techniques work and they can at least try them. Because if it's just going to be fearless fanatic, it's just, you're not even having any role playing anymore. It's just going, okay, we got somebody. All right, go get the Warhammer.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just strap him down to the wheel.
Yeah, I could see that. So I think there's kind of a, there's kind of a balance.
I think, can I make this
point?
Yep. In any game that you have torture, I know I'm going to echo you. Well, I guess I'm not echoing if I'm saying it before.
Pre-echoing,
Wayne. It's like, if you're going to have torture, it's got to matter.
Yeah.
If it doesn't make people uneasy, then why have it?
Right.
Right. So if it's just kind of every day in your game, even if you're playing a dark game, if you're playing in the World of Darkness and there's just torture left and right.
It's not the World of Darkness, it's the World of Torture.
Yeah. I mean, it's torture porn.
Beat me to it. No, that's what I was going to say.
And I like Saw, the first Saw, a lot. Second Saw, not so much. And I haven't seen any others because it was like, oh, I've kind of seen it.
Mm. Yeah.
Or as like Romero said, he doesn't get it because he said they're lacking metaphor, the torture porn.
It's only for visual effect, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's not saying anything. Mm. Yeah. And if your torture is not saying anything, then why was it in the game?
Yeah. I was thinking, like, fictitious example in Song of Ice and Fire, when Daenerys nails up all those, the slavers.
Yes. Yeah.
I was thinking that, because, like, at the end of that, even she's like, you know what, I did this, and what did it accomplish?
And there's consequences to that action.
Like, yeah. Did that? I mean, yeah, the slavers, they nailed up all those kids first.
Yeah,
and so she nailed up the exact same number, and she's like, "Did it bring those kids back to life? No.
Yeah.
Did it accomplish anything? No, not really. And I kind of wish I hadn't done it now.
Yeah, but it was really cool because then you have those really good scenes of they're watching. It's unsettling seeing all those. I guess you could say they're crucified kids.
Right.
And then, not to have spoilers, but then when it happens, it's like, well, how many do you want? Mm. And they say, oh, it's the same number as the kids. And you're like, oh, wow. Like, it was always for effect. But, I mean, if it just happened every time, even in a great story like that, you're like, okay, enough.
Oh, more crucified kids. Oh. I was going to say, like, about, I guess about the Iron Will NPCs and these death fanatics, like, with the GM, I can understand how you want to have a balance. Mm. All right. Yeah, on the one hand, sometimes you want it to be a challenge for the players to get this information, because I could see if you just hand them information, sometimes that could be seen as the story is too easy, or you're kind of not rewarding the players, but they haven't really overcome anything to get the reward. Just kind of like, yeah, here you go. And yeah, I understand that you want it to be a balance between a challenge and having these Iron Will death fanatics that never give up information. And obviously that can be a very fine line to find. So, I don't know. I think it's just worth kind of thinking about how far, I don't know, the subject can be interrogated and or tortured before they give the information.
Yeah, and or you could have somebody die, you know?
I mean, yeah.
Their heart gives out. You're like, wow, I wasn't doing anything. Yeah, but you had a bowl of rats and some hot coals,
yeah,
and you were going to put it on his stomach. You know, that was a mercy, his heart giving up. Because what, yeah, those who are familiar with the,
yeah,
you were telling me about that one.
Yeah.
Or you put that cage with the rat in it, the starving rat, over his face. Yeah, I mean, that's terrifying.
They were going by the one you bought. Yeah, he saw those two hollow trees and the crocks of milk and honey.
Yeah.
He knew it was going to happen. Yeah. So did you. So, yeah, I think that, like I said about consequence, that would probably be a good one to show the players the consequence. Like, no, you scared this guy so much. You set this up so well that he died, or you were so effective at inflicting pain that this guy died before you got what you wanted.
Or another consequence is that person's going to be so eager for the torture to stop that they'll tell you whatever. And they'll just tell you worthless information. They'll tell you lies. And I would give that person a bonus because the person's not lying for just to lie.
They got a lot of incentive to lie now.
Yeah, they've got a huge incentive, but they want they've never wanted anything more in their life than for the person torturing them to believe them.
Right.
So they should get a major bonus that whatever they say, that the torturer will believe them.
Would you even go so far as to give the torturer a penalty in the fact that, hey, I'm torturing this guy. He's going to tell us the truth
because I don't like the double. Yeah, that would be like a double penalty in my opinion. So we either give the bonus or apply a penalty. Mm. I think if you gave the bonus to the guy, it'd make the secret role easier.
Mm. Yeah, again,
the person being tortured. It would make this. Now, I should clarify, I don't mean somebody who's calculating, doing like what I would consider a calculated lie, where they're trying to feed false information to set up an ambush or something like that, because maybe the torture didn't even matter. They were always going to be calculating. But I'm talking about somebody who's been tortured and they just want it to stop, and they would like nothing more. They've never wanted anything more, and they're going to use all their resources or whatever resources they have left as convincing
naked
as possible. Yeah.
I'm just thinking, usually you get stripped naked before you get tortured. What resources do you have?
Yeah.
Only words.
You know, looking at the Reed technique, they say when a person starts crying, it infers guilt.
Right.
So you could have, if a person breaks down and starts crying while they're being tortured, that could infer that they're broken.
Mm.
So then when they start to say whatever the information is, then it makes it more believable.
Yeah. Kind of like we said.
And they could actually, because they are broken. And maybe it's not that they're, again, the calculated lie, where maybe they break down because they know the person would expect it, but they're like actually sobbing, then I would say they get a bonus in whatever they say.
Mm. Yeah, kind of goes back into like secrets and lies, like another kind of, I guess, visual tell, you know?
Yeah.
Like you said, like micro expressions and these little things that get used during the Reed technique. Well, yeah, that guy's crying, which means, yeah, the player knows he's broken, and so they kind of expect whatever to come out of them to be the truth.
Well, we've talked a lot about like the players being the torturers,
right?
And whether or not you should do that. But before we wrap up the episode, we should also talk about if the storyteller, the game master, is torturing players or people close to the players,
right?
And of course, that can add a really disturbing element if the players witness torture or the aftermath of torture. Like if they find like a videotape of something that, like some horrific torture scene, or they find whatever's left.
Mm.
They find that, you know, those two hollowed out logs.
Oh, I was thinking, what's that pile of wood shavings? Ooh.
Yeah.
From a tree.
You smell honey?
That could be pretty. I think it's not metagame,
if you,
but it could be pretty
if you
well.
Want the, right. If you want the villain to really be villainous, that can certainly add it. I mean, if you really want them to come across as evil, if you really want to set a dark tone to your game,
that would be it.
There's very few things. I mean, killing is killing.
Right.
I mean, and that's horrible. But things like torture or rape, which can be a type of torture, or, you know what would be a really terrible torture is like a disease? You knew somebody was like HIV positive, and they took the blood out of that person. They said they're going to inject it into you.
Yeah.
Or like, if you want to make it more medieval or ancient, you take something like the bubonic plague mm-hmm. or smallpox.
I'm sure there's a lot of fantasy diseases too.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. But like elements like that can really make your run of the mill villain just that memorable, horrific. I'm glad we played it. I never want to play it again. Kind of game.
I was thinking like that's kind of like the players, or that's like the characters seeing the results of torture, but not having done it themselves. But what about like when the players are actually the ones being tortured?
Well, that's where that was going to be the follow-up is, and that's really, really tough. And before the episode, we were talking about this a lot about when we were looking at like Majesty and that, is that when an NPC gets, let's say, glamored or mind-controlled,
right,
or an NPC is broken, that's fine for you as a game master, because I think White Wolf has the right of it, where they're the storyteller. And probably more so than anybody else at the table, they're most concerned about telling the story.
Right.
And when one of their NPCs gets beaten down in that situation, or is now kind of
out of the story,
or in the control of the players, and that's fine because you've got like a million other NPCs that you can throw into the game.
Got the whole world.
Yeah, you got the whole world. You haven't lost control. This is part of the story. Mm. That doesn't mean that this is all part of your tight railroad or ball of twine, but you haven't lost control of everything that you have. Right. But when you flip it and the player is being tortured, or the player is now being dominated, not in a fun way. Everything that they really control is now gone.
Well, it's like they have the control over what happens in the story based on their character, but when that character is like tied up and gagged on a chair, you don't have that much control of what your character does.
Yeah. I think it's tough, and it's a tough line to cross, and it's different than you're all caught. You wake up in the prison cell,
right?
Because then, like, oh great, a prison break or something like that. Oh, we're all like,
so you wake up in the prison cell, and they come in and strap you to the chair. Oh great, what do we do now? All right,
and then there's the very, I guess, obvious implication that if you like put him on the wheel and you break his limbs, then he's got a broken limb for a while. And that's something that we ran into in Fate when we played that.
Yeah.
When you use that as a, I'm drawing a blank. Was it Consequence? I believe it was Consequence.
I believe it was Consequence, yeah.
And you say, okay, it hit me, I guess that's a broken arm. But then when you're playing and you're like, well, is my arm still broken? Mm-hmm. But yeah, if they break the guy's knee, that's going to be broken for a while. And who wants to play a character with a broken leg?
Right. Yeah, I think like we had said before the episode, it's kind of like, yeah, on the one hand, you're telling a collaborative story.
Yeah.
And the players only really have control over their players. That's kind of the only way they can influence the world. But it's also a little bit of, I think some players can just say, you know what, regardless of what's happening to my character, regardless of what my character is doing, whether they're succeeding or failing, this story is still really good, and I'm still enjoying this story. I would argue that very few players actually have that, or it takes a while for that to develop. But it's kind of hard to have bad stuff happen to your character, because you ultimately kind of, you want your character to succeed, and you want your character to do well, and you want your character to, I mean, minor setbacks aside, ultimately you want to not win, but you want to achieve whatever your character set out to do.
Right.
And yeah, when you kind of lose that control or get that broken leg, you're kind of like, ah, man, that really sucks. Now my character's got a broken leg, and on the one hand, it opens up role-playing opportunities, but on the other hand, you're kind of like, and now my character kind of sucks, and I don't like that, you know?
Absolutely.
It's not fun.
Yeah. What am I going to do, be in the hospital the whole time?
Yeah.
Yeah, and when you look at like a movie like Casino Royale, and they had James Bond, and he's on the chair.
Right.
And he's swinging that rope, and it's hitting them in the nuts, the testicles. Right. Now,
that was hard to watch.
Yeah, and we can watch it and we go, ooh, that's really hard to watch because that's very painful.
Right.
Once that torture stops, he could walk around and he's fine. But it's really hard to simulate that in the game because they go like, okay, they strap you to the chair and you're naked, right? And he's hitting your nuts, hitting your balls. It's very painful. And you're explaining it and describing it to the person, but they're still, oh yeah, I don't tell him anything. But you're like,
dude,
all right,
you're getting kicked in the nuts repeatedly.
Right,
you're gonna break eventually.
Right, because then And again, I guess it's the flip of the iron-willed NPC. If the guy's going to be iron-willed in a situation that's horrifically painful, it's like an electric shock on TV. Sometimes you're like, oh, I suppose that's very painful. Personally, I've only been shocked maybe about twice in my life. And obviously, I'm still around.
Yeah.
And there's no burn scars on me.
You got
for people that have never met me. Yeah. So obviously, it wasn't that painful. So it's hard to understand why somebody would break from electric shock therapy, because it doesn't seem to have any long-term damage.
Right.
Of course, you can actually kill them if you keep applying. Right. So then you're like, well, dude, do you want me to just like strap you down and pull your sword arm and hack that off? Because I know you're not ambidextrous.
Right.
So again, the players have got to play in the situation too, or then they're kind of forcing the game master. If it's important to break them, I mean... Mm. Because you also want consequences. The torture is not dangerous.
Right.
It's not scary if you know, well, I'm going to get out of it and be fine.
Right.
And there's going to be no... I don't have to say a word because I just got to ride out these dice rolls. And then if I fail a dice roll, then I'll reluctantly say it.
You know what? I think...
But if you don't play that situation, then yeah, you're kind of forcing your game master to go, okay, cut off his arm. What? Right. What?
I think that would work a few times.
Well,
and then if the GM doesn't have the NPCs follow through with it, that might work like the first time. Okay, cut off his sword arm, or cut something off, and then the player might go, "Whoa, holy crap! Whoa, whoa, whoa! Let's talk about this," you know? And like, then they might give up the information, and yeah, that'd work a few times. But one, if the players start, I guess, cotton on to like, "Nah, the GM's not really going to do that," then you're right back to kind of where you started. And
oh
then you
no,
have
no, no, absolutely. I mean.
So
you might have to follow through with it.
Right.
But I mean, if the player is kind of forcing that situation, then imagine like all the players, everybody's going to metagame that.
Right.
Because it'd be like, I can't imagine too many games where you want to sit there and play Hostile
torture.
Or Saw, where it's just moving from one torture scenario to another, which is not fun.
I was going to say,
the movies aren't fun.
No, I don't enjoy those movies at all.
The first Saw movie is good, I'll just say.
Yeah, that's what people
say. It was telling something. Mm. It was telling a story.
I think the reason I brought that up is because it can be, you want the players to roleplay that. But as we said, it could be really hard to kind of not metagame that as well. And I think even like the best role players, somewhere in the back of their head, they're saying, I'm going to get out of this okay, which can not really affect their game. But
then don't do torture.
Okay, fair enough. Don't do torture. I was going to say, I think it would be, and this is going to sound really bad, I think it would be more effective to... use the classic villain technique of threatening someone else that they love. Bring in a family member, bring in a kid, bring in
That'd
a friend.
Be good. That'd be
because
good.
Then you're not threatening the player character or the player. You're threatening someone or something that's important to them. And if that person gets killed, if that person gets severely injured or crippled, it's not going to affect... Well, no, it is going to affect how the player character role plays, but it's not going to take away things they can do, right? Like breaking their leg, well, now they're crippled for however many sessions they're going to play, and that's not going to be fun for the player character. You break a family member's leg, and the player still has all their things that they can do with their characters, but they know you meant business.
Of course, the classic, it depends on the player.
Yeah, yeah.
Some players will say, yeah, I've got a sister or whatever, and it means nothing to them.
Mm.
So then, and that probably... unfortunately, is the player that's most likely to sit there strapped naked to the chair,
oh, yeah,
having that rope being swung at their testicles.
And say, I don't break.
Yeah, oh, I don't break. I'm made of iron. And are your balls made of iron?
I was trying to think of how to work that in, too. He's like, so you don't break, but your balls just did.
Like, all right, well, that wraps up our episode on interrogation and torture.
Mm.
And I'm going to say, like, I liked interrogation in a game before...
Right.
Doing the research. But now that I've done the research and saw some of the cool techniques that I was only vaguely aware of, I definitely want to use this more in a game.
Right.
And
you want to use those rats in the hot coal.
I was actually thinking interrogation.
All right,
but
right.
All right, the torture as well. again, is a great tone setter.
Mm. No, I agree. I think, if you kind of... more and more I've been thinking it's important to set tone. So if you kind of use that at the beginning, you know, not even with the PCs, but just...
Yeah.
Something they either witness or something they see or hear about, or I don't know how you'd work it in, but if you somehow work it in, it's kind of like, no, this is the tone for the game. These are possible consequences of your actions, or this is just, you know, what people do.
Well, if they go to that vampire party on a Saturday night and And he's like, well, this is what they do on a Saturday. This is what they think a good Saturday night
is. Entertainment, yeah. Or even it's like, no, that was Tuesday night.
Oh, yeah.
Tuesday. It's like, oh, that you got invited to a party on Saturday. Saturday? Whoa, no.
No, thanks.
No, thanks.
I've already lost
RSVP? Enough. I'm sorry. I'm out of town that day.
Ooh, I've already dropped to 5 humanity.
I don't have anywhere lower to go.
Or if we're talking about a more historical setting, using something like interrogation or torture, and I guess the combination when we look at ancient Greece and Rome, where they would have to torture slaves just to show that the evidence was reliable, that can really give people a good idea of what they're or how they think. So there's like, oh, these people are a bit more
severe.
They're different. So I need to play my guy differently. And tune in next week for episode 3 of our Month of Horror.
So I'll say, thank you for tuning in to Idle Red Hands. You can check us out at the forum. The website is www.idlereredhands. Can't write.
.com.
Yep. Oh, thank you. Can't quite do it as fast as Chris. Check us out on the forums, at stitcher.com, DriveThruRPG, and at iTunes.
And like us on
Facebook. Facebook page.
Like us on Facebook and like us on Stitcher.
Oh, you can like us on Stitcher too. Yeah. Okay. And, I think that's it.
All right.
So, see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Drive-through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-through RPG. The one true source for RPGs. Ah!
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.